06-1354, Association of Civilian Technicians, New York State Council, Petitioner versus Federal Labor Relations Authority. Mr. Schimber for the petitioner, Mr. Blanford for the respondent.
But can one tell from the FLRA decision whether an unfair labor practice was committed or not? When I pick that up and read it, do I know better today than I did yesterday whether under on these facts there was an unfair labor practice?
No. The FLRA decision, because the FLRA...
Under AFJE, isn't that what we're supposed to look at? But that ends the case then, doesn't it? We're supposed to look at the FLRA decision, not the arbitrator's decision, not anything else. Look at the FLRA decision to see if it involves an unfair labor practice. And AFGE has construed that quite narrowly, right?
The Department of the Interior case, in that case, the court's opinion said that the court certainly has jurisdiction if the union claims statutory ULP violations and characterizes its claim as such. That is the situation here.
That's not how it started out here, is it? I mean, the union chose the arbitration route and did not speak in terms of ULP in the original claim, did they? Or?
The brief to the arbitrator expressly characterized the claim as a statutory ULP claim, and the employer acknowledged that the grievance raised statutory ULP claims, did not in any way object to that characterization of the claim before the arbitrator, and the arbitrator also expressly acknowledged that the grievance did raise statutory ULP claims.
Did I hear you say in response to Judge Griffith's question that you can't tell from the authority's decision that there was a ULP claim here?
Whether there was a ULP, I believe, was Judge Griffith's point.
Yeah.
And not certainly you can tell from the FLRA decision that there was a ULP claim.
Well, can't you even tell? I mean, what about the motion, the denial of the motion for reconsideration? They said in a footnote that were they to consider it, they would reject it.
It clearly says that they acknowledge the existence of, right, of the claim. And what they're saying there, if they, their holding is that we decline.
Well, why aren't you relying on that? I'm sorry, why aren't you relying on that, the proposition that it's clear from the authority's decision that this did involve an unfair labor practice?
I do rely upon that. It's absolutely clear from the FLRA's decision that the case involves a ULP claim. My understanding, Judge Griffith's question was whether or not you can tell from the FLRA's decision that there wasn't a fact on the merits of a ULP violation. And the response to that was to say, well, we can't tell from the decision because they didn't reach that issue, but there certainly is acknowledgement in the FLRA's decision that there was a ULP claim here.
Right.
The question before the court on the merits is whether or not their refusal to decide the merits of the claim was contrary to law. The first point is that the court certainly has jurisdiction to decide whether the reason for the FLRA's failure to decide the claim is contrary to law. The reason why the court has jurisdiction to decide that question is because the union expressly and clearly claimed in the FLRA proceedings that a ULP violation had occurred. The presence of the union's clear claim, the authority's refusal to reach the merits of the claim, and its denial of the relief that the claim sought certainly gives the court jurisdiction to determine whether the reason for the FLRA's refusal to decide the merits is contrary to law, and that is in fact the case here. The FLRA refused to decide the merits of the ULP claim. because the arbitrator had failed to decide the merits. And the FLRA then ruled that in the absence of a written stipulation by the employer expressly agreed to the presentation of the ULP claim to the arbitrator for resolution on the merits, the arbitrator had no obligation to decide the merits of the claim. This no obligation without written stipulation rule is contrary to the legal framework that mandates and governs grievance arbitration. Under the provisions of the collective bargaining law that apply, grievances include claim violations of law, including ULP violations, and in the absence of resolution by settlement, the union has the right to demand binding arbitration of the grievance. Only the collective bargaining agreement can restrict the right to present particular grievances through the grievance arbitration process, and the FLRA's creation of an additional barrier, one that grants the agency, the employer, power to veto unilaterally the union's right to a decision on the merits, is incompatible with the legal framework and tilts what should be a level.
In this case, was the ALJ, because of the absence of a stipulation, was the ALJ prohibited from resolving the ULP?
Well, you don't mean ALJ, you mean arbitrator.
I mean the arbitrator.
Yes.
The arbitrator.
No, I mean the arbitrator could have gone ahead and done it.
The problem with the FLRA's ruling is that it deprives us of the right to a decision on the merits. It means we must persuade the arbitrator to decide the merits of the ULP claim, and the arbitrator has absolutely.
You wouldn't have any objection if you wouldn't be here if the arbitrator had ruled that, for example, the unfair labor practice claim was procedurally deficient for some reason, right?
Well, then we would be in front of the authority arguing that procedural deficiency.
Right, but you wouldn't be. But your objection, as I understand it, is that you're entitled to a decision on the merits one way or another, or an explanation for why it wasn't.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. This is a situation where there was no procedural deficiency. Both the employer and the arbitrator acknowledged that the grievance did present statutory ULP claims. And although it's true, as the government points out in its brief, that the original shop steward papers did not cite law, we replied by pointing out that there's no requirement that the shop steward's grievance cite law. And in any event, if there were such a requirement, the union, the employer waived it because both the arbitrator and the employer acknowledged in the arbitration proceeding that statutory ULP claims were raised. And any kind of idea that there was a procedural default at the early part played no role in the decision of this case at any level, either the arbitrator's level or the FLRA. That's just not an issue in this case. And what's at issue is the validity of this rule of law, the no obligation without stipulation rule. The court should find that it has jurisdiction to decide the validity of that rule, should hold that that rule is incompatible with the legal framework, and remand the case for further proceedings without going further. If there are no further questions, I would reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from the respondent.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Under the principles established first by this court in OEA, clarified in AFG Local 2510, it's clear that this court does not have jurisdiction to review the authority's order. A statutory UOP was not an explicit ground.
What do you do with the language that your opponent relies on so heavily in the Department of Interior case? Quote, if the aggrieved party chose to go the grievance procedure route but characterized its claim as a statutory unfair labor practice, judicial review certainly would be available. That seems to describe this case spot on.
Except that's not, the holding of Interior was not that raising the UOP somewhere in the arbitration proceeding is a sufficient condition to have the authorities subsequent order involved in UOP. The context of Interior was different. In Interior, it was decided at all levels that the grievance arbitration proceeding did not raise a statutory UOP. The quote from Interior is where the court's talking in very general terms about what it is to involve a UOP. And one of the issues in the previous case in the OEA was whether or not if the grievance had alleged factual matters which could have been the basis for a UOP charge, but were not characterized as a UOP charge, that would not satisfy the jurisdictional prerequisites of 7173. That in Interior, they're emphasizing what had already been cited in the OEA, that, well, if it's characterized as a UOP, well, that's a part of a necessary condition, but it's not a sufficient condition. Interior does not stand for the proposition that simply raising a UOP somewhere in the arbitration, even the arbitration proceedings.
Well, it wasn't somewhere in it. I mean, that's not really a very fair characterization of this. I mean, you know, they emphasize this throughout their pleadings, the ULP, the unfair labor practice part. This was not, as I think...
We acknowledge that the union clearly raised...
Sure it did.
At least by the pre-hearing brief.
Yeah.
That's no question.
Right, okay. And the standard is, was it necessarily implicated in the decision, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and how could it not be, since it was effectively disposed of? I mean, it's the end of the case now,
well,
right?
The term necessarily implicated by, we believe, was, I think, clarified in Local 2510. And the test in Local 2510 is very clear. To be reviewable, the substance of a ULP must be discussed in the authority's order. And that was not done.
You have the footnote in the denial of the rehearing saying that had the authority addressed it, they would have found it without merit.
But, Your Honor, that is mere dicta.
That's what happens when you start putting footnotes in these things.
Pardon me, Your Honor?
That's what happens when you start putting footnotes in opinions.
But I presume that footnote is mere dicta, would not be reviewable, and does not constitute a substantial discussion of a ULP.
You would say the important question is the one Judge Griffith started with.
That's precisely right, Your Honor. And if you look at the authority's decision, what the authority discusses are standards of review of arbitration awards and the merits of the arbitrator's contractual determination. Neither of those things are reviewable in this court.
So if someone... union has a choice, right? They can bring the ULP claim either as an unfair labor practice or in the grievance procedure,
or
correct?
Or through grievance arbitration.
Okay.
And our position is that they take their form as they find it. The arbitration procedures are different than the statutory ULP procedures. And so you take your form as you...
Well, will this discourage arbitration? I mean, why, under this rule, why would a union, if the union knows that even if it brings a very clear unfair labor practice charge in a grievance procedure, that it loses the right to bring that to court if the authority simply doesn't mention it, why would anybody who thought they had a ULP invoke the grievance procedure?
Well, I think in this case,
isn't that contrary to what the statute's all about? It's supposed to encourage. It's supposed to encourage the use of the grievance procedures, right?
And they have that choice. But
you agree with me that this is going to be very discouraging.
No, I don't believe so.
Oh, yeah, why not?
And let me explain why. The initial step here is that the parties, when they went to the arbitrator, did not agree on the framing of the issue. That's a standard practice in arbitration proceedings. Absent the stipulation, remember, arbitration is...
You're saying the standard practice is to stipulate, or to not?
The practice is the the law is of arbitration practice is that parties submit the issue to the arbitrator. If the parties can't agree on the submission, it's up to the arbitrator to frame the issue. That is basic arbitration.
But won't the practice now be, if you prevail, that they won't stipulate? What benefit would there be to stipulate? You take your chances then, right?
Well, this case doesn't create that law. That's been the arbitration practice forever and ever and ever. And parties could always throw a monkey wrench in the arbitration practice by not stipulating.
I don't honestly know the answer to this, but is it fairly common that they do not agree to the statement of the issue and the arbitrator resolves it? Is that a common occurrence? And I'm not throwing anybody a pillow on that one.
Your Honor, I'm not in a position to know that.
Okay, we'll ask your opposing counsel. He will know. Your opposing counsel will know. We'll ask him when he gets back up.
But
I think you'll know.
Whether or not it's standard, it does happen. There's plenty of case law where the authorities have done this.
Let me ask you about this no obligation rule, okay?
Sure.
I didn't see in your brief any response to the union's statutory argument. Are you familiar with what it is? Their statutory argument is that under 7121A1, it requires that the grievance procedure be a process for, quote, resolving the dispute, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And under the statute, they have a right to bring an unfair labor practice claim in a grievance procedure.
Yes.
And so they argue that under your rule, under the authority's rule, which allows a UOP claim to sort of disappear because the employer won't stipulate, in other words, they get no resolution of it, that violates the statute because it wouldn't effectively, quote, resolve the grievance. Now, you didn't respond to that in your brief.
Well, I think we did.
You did? Where?
We pointed out that it's a well-established arbitration law. No matter what the issue is, if the parties can't agree on the submission.
That's not their point. Their point is that they're entitled under the statute to a resolution of it and to rule that they have obtained a resolution when the employer won't stipulate completely shifts the power to the employer. That's the problem here. That if the arbitrator here had said, well, look, it was procedurally deficient and I'm not going to consider it, that would have been fine. They would have had a resolution of it. But to say that they have a resolution of it when the employer won't stipulate, they're arguing is arbitrary and capricious.
I don't please you, Your Honor.
But you didn't answer that in your brief.
I think uh-huh. We did at least by implication.
Okay. Well, do it here directly.
Yes, Your Honor.
Focusing on the word resolution in the statute. That's their argument.
And I think it was resolved here. It was resolved for whatever.
Because the employer wouldn't stipulate. That's why it was resolved.
But it was.
And their argument is
that all the time in arbitration. And
what, that they won't stipulate?
Well, oftentimes the parties don't agree on the framework.
Well, all you're saying to me then is that this violation of the statute happens all the time.
I don't believe it is a violation of the statute.
Well, it's not an answer. You see my point? It's not an answer to their statutory argument to say they can't be right because it happens all the time.
Yeah, that's
okay.
That's not
the point. You're not arguing that.
Right.
You're not arguing that. But what is the answer to this argument? Maybe there's a good argument to it, a good answer to it, but
the arbitrator,
it's supposed to resolve the dispute.
Pardon me?
The statute says the grievance procedure is supposed to resolve it.
That's right, and I think it was resolved. It was resolved to the detriment of the union.
And what was the reason?
For whatever reason, the arbitrator, in the absence of the stipulation, made a determination. That's part of the arbitrator's power.
Ah, but that's what we don't know, because your rule is that as long as the employer doesn't stipulate, the ALJ, the arbitrator has no obligation to consider it. So we don't know. We don't know why it wasn't resolved, other than that the employer wouldn't stipulate.
And
sure,
the employer wouldn't stipulate, and two, the
arbitrator made a determination. Now, we don't have...
Wouldn't it be fairer to say the parties could not reach a stipulation as to the terms of the issue rather than saying that one party wouldn't stipulate?
I think that's true. We don't know exactly that, but that's the point. There has
it takes two parties to not stipulate just as it takes two to stipulate.
But it's the stipulation is to what issues will be will be arbitrated, right?
That's right.
Well, don't you think it's a little unlikely that the union wouldn't stipulate to arbitrating the unfair labor practice?
Don't know, Your Honor.
Oh, come on.
You're probably right.
That's ridiculous. Of course it is. I mean, the union's not going to raise a ULP in its complaint and then refuse to stipulate to its arbitration.
No, in this case, because it's the union who's the moving party. Occasionally, you have employers who are the moving party.
Okay, but that's not this case.
There's nothing special about ULPs that change the arbitration procedure. Arbitration is a matter of contract arbitration.
Yeah, but it's dramatically changed if there's a ULP because there's a right to judicial review.
Under the union's theory, there would be a right to judicial review when they raise it in arbitration. Interestingly enough, if they raised it under the statutory proceeding, there would not be a guarantee of judicial review because they could fail to get past step one, which is the general counsel.
What would they have? They would have a reason from the general counsel, correct?
They would have a reason.
The general counsel has to give a reason. Here, under this theory, there's no reason.
That's right. But the result of both cases...
But you were the one who started out by telling me that they're parallel. Now you can see they're not.
No, they're not parallel because you have arbitration procedures, and you go to arbitration, you buy arbitration procedures. You go to ULP procedure, you buy ULP procedure.
I agree with that. That's fine. So far, so good.
And
What we're arguing about here is what are those procedures?
And under the ULP procedure, it's different. You get a reason if the TC determines not to issue a complaint, but it's not a reviewable decision. It may not be a decision on the merits. It may be simply that the GC decides this case is not prosecutorial discretion. This isn't worth pursuing. That's a reason.
Okay.
That's a legitimate
reason. Right, so after you've said all this now, go back to the language of the statute for me. Okay?
Okay.
7121A1.
That the grievance procedure
be a process for, quote,
for resolving disputes.
Yeah.
And I don't think that resolving disputes does not necessarily mean a decision on the merits.
No. It could be a procedural defect. Could be anything.
Which is what
they don't have here. That's their whole argument. See, that's their argument. They don't have that here. Under the no obligation rule, by definition, allows the arbitrator not to decide the question one way or the other, just to ignore it.
In the absence of a stipulation, that's correct. But that's arbitration law. That's not ULP law. And the authority has applied that law, the no obligation law, applies in any circumstance. Multiple contractual issues, other statutory issues besides ULPs. It's pure arbitration law. And what Your Honor is suggesting is that this court should look at that principle of arbitration law, which Congress has said this court does not have jurisdiction if it were arbitration decision, only in the limited exception when the case involves a ULP. And this court in 2510 has said what counts as involving a ULP is a substantive discussion of a ULP in the authority.
Well, now you're back to the jurisdictional question.
That's right.
That's right.
Okay.
Your Honors, I see my time is 4 seconds from expiration. Are there any other questions?
It reached expiration. Do my colleagues have further questions? If not, then your time is up. How much time does counsel have left?
6 minutes.
6 minutes? That ought to be plenty, counsel. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you to tell us if it is fairly frequent that the parties are unable to stipulate as to the issue on arbitration or if that's a rare occurrence.
That is the only question I advise to try to answer. And unfortunately, I cannot speak for general experience. I can only speak for my own. Mm-hmm. Which is that I've never been able to get the agency to stipulate the issues that will be presented. And certainly, certainly under the rule announced by the authority, in this case, the employer will never have an incentive to stipulate to...
So it is common already, though, that the employer does not stipulate to the statement of the issue that the union presents. It is common that they do not reach stipulations of the issue. I made it unfortunately complicated.
In the cases that I have handled, that has been universally the case. I don't know why.
Counsel, I think we see you here more than we see anybody else on FLRA cases. And if that's your experience, then that is a general experience for our experience.
Based on your experience, is there any circumstances under which a union would not stipulate to arbitrate a ULP claim it brought?
Counsel, we appreciate that, and thank to both counsel. Call the next case.